Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with an EV or plug-in hybrid from the Kia e-range.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. By the way, if you're thinking of going to the Garth Brooks concerts at Easter next year, April 23 and 24 in Croke Park, apparently, probably more will be added. Hotel prices are going up already, and some hotels are already booked out near Croke Park. But anyway, more anon on that. Now, Park West in West Dublin, there's a railway station there called Park West and Cherry Orchard. Cherry Orchard is the big estate. It has a fantastic new park there, if you haven't seen it. It's beautiful and beautifully kept by Dublin City Council. But last Friday evening, and I'm giving a warning now to anyone who has young children in the car, this is without a shadow of a doubt one of the most extreme examples of animal cruelty I've ever come across, especially for animal lovers, who are all of us, and most especially for dog lovers. You may want to turn away. Dee, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Dee. You saw us. It was last Friday night.
Yeah.
And as I say, I'm giving a warning. That's why I'm stuttering here, because it is absolutely horrific what they did to this dog. Tell us where you were and what you saw.
Yeah, sorry, just bear with me because I'm still quite distressed since last Friday. I'm still struggling to talk about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But last Friday I was coming home from work. It was probably about 5:30 when I was travelling through Park West. And I was on my way up towards the Wheatfield Road coming through Park West. I just passed the train station.
Yeah.
And I was coming to a junction of lights there. So I was taking a right in towards Cedarbrook, and I had stopped at lights and I could see something going on in the field just across the road from me. And it was a gang of, I don't know, boys, men. Like, I'd say they're definitely like 18, 19, 20.
Okay.
And I could see one of them with a spade in his hand. Now, the grass was long, but I could see something. I suspected something sinister was going on.
Okay.
And I stopped at the lights and I could see some lady on her phone, and she was shouting something across to them. And it was very quick now, because by the time I sort of noticed something was going on, then the lights went green and I had to go. But
okay.
I could see she was there shouting something back at her.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, bear in mind, I had my 3-year-old daughter as well, so in the car. So I went back. It took a turn at the roundabout ahead, and I went back to check on that lady because I just thought she was on her own. I just wanted to see was everything okay with her or not. So she started walking towards me, and I flagged her down. So I basically asked her. I said, "Is there something going on there?" I said, "Please don't." Basically, I said, "Are you okay?" And then I said to her, "Please don't tell me that's animal related," because I travel to Park West every single day, and I see all sorts going on with animals. But she said to me, she says, "There's a little brown dog," and she said, "They were throwing the dog and they're hitting it with a spade."
So they're throwing the little brown puppy into the air like a slitter, and using, are they one spade or two spades?
No, because when I spoke to her a bit more, I said, "I saw a spade," and she goes, "They have two spades."
Oh my God.
She goes, "They have one each."
So they're using the spade as Hurley's and the puppy as a slitter.
By the sound,
Mother
of
God.
So anyway, I said to her, I said, "I saw you on the phone." I said, "Did you call the guards?" And she says, "Yeah, no, I picked up her accent. She wasn't from Ireland."
Okay.
And she said to me that she was only quite new here. And she said that she called, I don't know, 122 or something. Some other number. And I said, "Okay," I said, "I know the closest, one of the closest guard stations here." So I dialed, I Googled quickly and I dialed Ronanstown.
Yeah, the nearest. That'd be the nearest to Cherry Orchard.
Yeah, Ronanstown and Clondalkin. But Ronanstown would, like Ballyfermot is probably close as well, but Ronanstown would be my first in my head, you know. So I called them and basically I was told, you know, "Oh, well, I'll have to transfer you to Clondalkin Garda Station." And I basically said how urgent this was and how it was basically the horror was unfolding in front of me. And I said, "You need to send up a squad car now, because, you know, like, obviously, there was no time at all." So he pretty much, look, I'm not saying anything bad about the guards, but he just, he just ignored me and just transferred me out to Clondalkin Garda Station. Now, when I spoke to the guards in Clondalkin, he was actually very sympathetic and horrified himself. But he said to me, I will log the call. And I said, he took my reg, he took everything from me, you know, and wanted to know my exact location and everything. So anyway, I said to that lady, to cut a long story short, I said to that lady, you go on home, because I knew she was walking and they had seen her and they were interacting with her, that group. So I was worried for her safety. I was in my car. So anyway, she went on off, and then I pulled around where I could get a better view of them. Mm-hmm. And I pulled up with my hazard lights on the main road, and I basically sat there for about 45 minutes. Waiting, praying to God that a squad car would pass me. In the meantime, I rang the guards five times. I went back to Rowlandstown Garda Station. I was pretty much told by the guard there, well, he didn't really entertain me, to be honest with you. And I got more of a response from Clondalkin Garda Station. And I just called the guards again. I said to them, I'm on the main road. I said, I have my hazards on. I said, I'm easy to spot if you could send a car up here, you know. Yeah. So anyway, the whole time I was watching them, and I could see, like, I don't want to go into really graphic details because it's so upsetting, but, you know, by their actions, I could see that they're basically butchering the dog. Oh. So, I couldn't get out of the car. Had I been on my own, I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, you had
a
3-year-old baby.
But I had my 3-year-old daughter in the car, and I couldn't leave her.
And many of them, Dee, do you think they were trying to picture it now?
I'd say there was about 10 of them.
And you think they weren't 10-year-olds? You reckon they were near 80?
Oh no, they were a lot older. Like, one of them actually approached my car because they could see me watching. And I had my car locked, but one of them approached me and he basically signalled. He didn't touch the car, he just signalled to me to wind down my window. So I only wound it down a little bit because I knew he was possibly connected to them. I didn't see him come from the field, mm-hmm. so I think he'd come round pathway, around by the side of the road. And he just said to me, are you watching them? And I sort of knew if I gave the wrong answer, I didn't know what he could do. So I just basically said no. Pretended I was innocent. Yeah. I didn't know what he was talking about. And because I had obviously both our safety to worry about,
course,
because my daughter was very distressed. She could hear me onto the guards all the time. She kept asking me about what's wrong with the dog and this, that, and the other. And, you know, I was just getting all that time I was sitting there for 45 minutes. Not one squad car passed me. I even said it to the guards. I said, I'm in one of the most. And I've been years working in Parkwest. I know the area very well. Mm. And I see the horrors a lot of the time that goes on, and even in broad daylight. And I just, like I just said, in one of the, and I'm sorry, I know some people, I'm sure there's lovely people in Parkwest, but it's quite a rough area as well where I was. And I just said, not one squad car passed by me. I was desperate to get out of the car, just flag someone down. I saw a fire brigade van going past me. I was either going to flag him down, but I just was so desperate. And then, of course, I saw two guys coming towards me with a dog. They looked about in their 40s, and I ran out to them, and I basically was so distressed, and I was telling them what was happening, and I said, I don't know what you can do to help me. But I said, they were horrified as well, and he just sort of said to me, by the looks of what they're doing, that dog is long gone. Aww. So then afterwards, at that stage, I ended up by casino and was coming, and I wasn't getting a response from the guards. I rang them again, and he said, I can't give you an ETA. He said, there is a call logged. I can't tell you when a car can come up. And I said, I'm completely here on my own. And so I just had to watch the horror unfold right in front of me.
And as these, you can't even call them animals, because animals are in the main very, very caring and loving pets. These 8 or 10, 18, 19-year-olds with two shovels, or two spades that they were using as hurleys, and a puppy, brown puppy, that they were using as a schlitter into the air. Did you hear or see any expression from them? Like, were they all standing still? Were they dancing?
No, they're all like in a circle, and they saw me. They knew I was watching, basically. Yeah. And they kept shouting out, don't get me wrong, I couldn't hear what they were saying, but I could see from their actions, their facial expressions, I was close enough that I could sort of see their, you know, they're sort of nearly heckling me, you know, as if taunting, as if we know where you're watching, you know, and I had to keep the engine running.
And could they see you were on your mobile phone, D, or have your hands free?
I actually went to take a photo and I'd say they saw me taking a photo. Yeah.
And did you take a photo?
I did take a photo, but I don't know if it's clear enough, you know.
Yeah.
So they're very
So just in terms of trying to get witnesses to find out who carried out this horrific act of unspeakable cruelty on a little puppy. It was 6 o'clock last Friday evening, opposite the Park West Cherry Orchard railway station. It's a relatively new railway station. It's well known. It's a fine big building. Barnville Drive is on the other side. It's the Cherry Orchard Estate is on the other side. Now, you mentioned to me, Dee, earlier the horrors that you've seen driving home from Park West with animals. What have you seen?
Like, I've seen, you know, a tiny, I don't even know if you call it a Shetland, it seems smaller than a Shetland pony, being whipped, like, relentlessly trying to go over that road, a station road, coming out of Park West with three adult men on it, and the pony can barely get up the hill. I've seen a mare and its foal. I was coming into work one morning, it was about 8:15, and I saw a mare and its foal. That roundabout that I referred to earlier that I turned at, the mare and foal were walking along the road, just aimlessly, completely lost looking. And I called the guards then, and I actually said it to them at the time. I said, one of your cars has just passed us.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they just completely ignored what was going on in front of them. So it's like, I don't know, these people are untouchable. They don't want to deal with it. And, I know the guards have a lot to be dealing with as it is, but like, I just can't accept this whole blindly or just completely blatantly ignoring something like that.
And in your conversations with the Gardaí, when you said it's happening opposite Park West and Cherry Orchard railway station, did the guards say, oh yeah, we know that area, or I've never heard of it?
Oh, they knew who I was talking about, exactly, yeah. They knew it, yeah. So, like, he didn't say, oh, I know the area. He just sort of said, what exact location are you at? And when I called him back, I said, I pulled out onto the main road, so I'm on the main Park West road. I said, so if you're heading out towards Wheatfield, I said, I'm just opposite the, if memory serves you correct, I did say about the train station. And you couldn't miss me. I was just sitting there. And I think a lot of people were looking at me because they probably thought I was broken down. But you couldn't miss, the guards couldn't have missed me. And not one car passed me on that whole strip because it's a straight road. And not one car, I didn't see one. I was looking in my rear view mirror the whole time, even in front of me, and I couldn't see anything. And when I went down to it, what I did was, after I could see, I couldn't watch anymore because part of me was praying to God that poor dog had died a quick death and wasn't still alive. I just went straight to Clondalkin Garda station, and the guard in there, he was, he was very sympathetic, but he could see how completely distressed I was.
Yeah.
And I just basically said, why didn't you send up a car? I said, I've been sitting there for about 40 minutes. I said, watching everything going on. And he said to me, he said something, I don't know, he said something about they were dealing with a drunk or something like that. And I was going, oh my God. I said, so I basically had to watch that.
And just as you mentioned drink, was there any evidence that this group of 19-year-olds, about 10 of them, had any cans or...
No, I don't think so.
6 o'clock in the evening, last Friday, opposite Park West, they're all, Cherry Orchard railway station.
What happened was worse, and don't get me wrong, I won't be giving any descriptions or anything, but when they saw me actually approaching these two guys, some of them scarpered, and one of them was with a little girl, which made it even more horrifying, and she, from the distance, she looked no more than 6 years old, which was even more
And she was
horrifying.
She
was with them.
You're saying she was with one of the perpetrators?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
She was running away with them. And then one of them as well, just to mention it, because it's probably important to mention, I didn't say to your researcher at the time, but there was a white dog with one of them as well. I can't make out what type of dog it was, but it was a white dog, but it was on a lead.
So one of them had a dog with them as they were butchering the other dog?
Yeah.
With two spades, like a game of hurling, they were using the puppy.
Yeah.
We have no idea what happened to the remains of the dogs. I wonder, did the Gardaí go up or call the DSPCA?
I don't Because I don't know, did they? I'm not sure. Did they? I never got a call back to say what happened. Did anyone answer the call? I never got anything like that. Yeah, now, the Garden, the Dog and Garden Station said they will answer it. But I said, well, it's probably too little, too late. So I was long gone. I don't even know if they know the exact location. Because, as I said, I was on the main road.
No, your description is great. When I got it this morning, I looked in Google Earth and you can see it exactly. Yeah. Your description is bang on.
Yeah. I have to pass that area every single morning and I'm just completely distraught over it. And I feel like it's completely affected my mental health as well, because I just find...
Your daughter didn't see any of this, did she?
She couldn't see it. She has there was one of those visors on her window. But she knew, she could tell from me that I was distressed in some way. And I didn't want to expose her to that, but it's just, in the moment. Okay. And, they knew exactly what they were doing. And as I said, they were heckling me. They knew. And the fact that one of them approached my car checking.
Were you watching us?
Yeah, he knew I was watching.
Good God. Okay, it's a terrible experience. Terrible experience for the poor puppy. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure now. I know you're probably just referring to it. I don't know what's an actual puppy, but it could have been an older dog. But it's just...
Okay. Yeah. Okay, it was a dog. Brown puppy. Brown dog, sorry. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, do you mind yourself? You did your best. You did your best with a 3-year-old in the back of the car. You turned around and went back and you've brought it to the public's attention. It is absolutely horrific. And hopefully, we can't assume they're from around the area, but hopefully somebody sees any level of animal cruelty. So any animal will try and check and dial 999 or whatever and try and get help. Dee, thanks a million.
Yeah, thanks so much. And Joe, I'd just like to say as well, I just want to very much, a lot of my call obviously is after that horrific, the horrific experience I went through and the poor dog as well. But I just wanted to sort of highlight a lot of this is going on in Park West and it's just completely ignored by the authorities. And I just wanted to mention
You've made that point very, very strongly. Dee, thanks indeed. Thanks
all
indeed.
Thanks so much. Okay.
Bye-bye. 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Well, a lot of people's unanswered prayers have been answered because apparently Garth Brooks is coming back. He's either, there's two sets of dates and there's sets of dates mentioned. One is April next year, the Easter weekend, basically. April 24th, 23rd, 24th, the anniversary of the Rising. I don't know if it's Easter next year, I'll check. And then apparently there's another application in for two weekends in September. But surely that would clash with... The end of the championship and the All-Ireland finals. But anyway, and we already checked with some hotels. Some hotels are already booked out for the 23rd and the 24th. Okay, Susie, you had tickets for the 2014 five nights that never happened.
I know, I did. Hi, Joe.
And you still love him?
Oh, my God. What's greater than the anticipation? I can't wait to see him again.
So you will buy tickets?
Oh, absolutely.
Regardless of the price. Does the price make a difference?
I got stung the last time. I bought tickets on eBay and the people didn't refund me, but they got refunded. And obviously it was tickets out.
Are you serious?
So, I did.
And how much did you pay for those tickets?
There was four tickets. Look,
they were
lesson learned, about 1,600.
You paid 400 quid a ticket?
Yeah, that's what they were going for, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And have you still got the tickets even as a little
souvenir? I do. Okay. Not that they're worth anything now, but...
Well, put them in a frame.
There. Yeah. With the caption, you big Aegis on top of it.
No, but you will go again.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, have you tried? The dates aren't firmed up. It's either April or September, apparently.
Before I just said, you know what, get in ahead of the posse, and I tried to book Croke Park for all the week, not all the weekends, but as in I tried the first weekend and the next weekend and whatever in September, and no.
And have you ever been to a Garth Brooks concert?
Yes, I was there in 97, the concert.
In Croke Park?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was incredible. And did you see him or meet him?
No.
No.
But my stalking abilities have increased greatly over the years, so...
Have you tried to book a hotel in Dublin? You're from Cork.
Yeah, Yeah.
And have you managed to get a hotel in Dublin? You haven't?
No.
Just if you if you're at the 97, it was 97, wasn't it? 97 kind. Just one suggestion came in from a listener saying, given that the entertainment industry in Ireland hasn't existed for 2 years, two, if he does five nights in one venue, and that's obviously cheaper in terms of infrastructure instead of moving around the country, if he does five nights in one venue, the gate, if you work out an average of 100 quid a ticket, including the Ticketmaster fees, the gate will bring in 24 million euro. 24 million euro. And then someone made a suggestion, why doesn't he undertake, now I don't know how this works, how this business works, who gets the gate and who gets whatever, but why doesn't Garth Brooks undertake to have three, if he's doing five nights, to have three support acts, Irish support acts on every night, a solo singer, a band, and an up-and-coming band, OK? That means over the five nights, 18 bands will get 10 minutes each, but that they should be paid handsomely. What did does he have support, do you remember? Was there an act on before Garth Brooks?
Oh, God, I was so excited just to see him. I probably even went in, you know, I wouldn't go in to see a support act. I'd just go and... go to see him.
Okay, Michael Rattigan contacted us. Michael, you're from the... What camp are you from? Go ahead.
I think, first of all, I wouldn't be... I like country music now, don't get me wrong, Joe, but I think he has the greatest neck of a giraffe to even come over here after 7 years. Was he in a coma? Now, I tell you one thing, the Irish people, they were very, very naive over here. Now, up to last year... I bought tickets, the last time he was supposed to play in Croke Park for friends of mine. Now, unfortunately, her partner passed away, her husband passed away. And they look forward, and I remember going in, getting the tickets. I should have thought I was going to have a heart attack running in to get the tickets. It's something that I love doing. I love to see the expression on my faces.
Do you remember how much you paid for the tickets?
Oh, God, it was over 100 each, I think.
Okay, take in 24 million if he does. Michael, why do you think, as you say, Garth Brooks is a hard neck coming back? Why?
Well, I can tell you one thing. 7 years, I'll tell you why he has a hard neck. Last year, and you can check this out, he cancelled all most of his concerts because of this virus in America and around the world, right?
So he
couldn't be short of money. This is pension money for him. Now, I don't know why and how they get away with this. I mean, as I said, I'm not a huge fan of Bruce Springsteen, but the guy has come over here over the years. He's never failed.
And the other thing, apparently Bruce Springsteen is rumoured for Slane next year. But the thing about Bruce Springsteen is he moves his rig. Well, it's a big rig, it's an expensive rig, as Garth Brooks. But Bruce moves it. He plays Dublin. I think he played Kilkenny. I think he played Cork. I think he played Belfast.
But Garth Brooks, now the way he could have done that, come on, the Aviva Stadium or Lansdowne Road, whatever. He could have played two nights there. They weren't giving him the five nights. They were giving him two nights.
And you're saying...
But the greed set in, Joe. Come on. Now, when Bruce Springsteen... I just checked it up on the thing last night. I was actually on YouTube. You can check it. And he got 5 million. 5 million for one night. Now, can you imagine why Garth Brooks wanted to do five nights in Croke Park? Your mother of God,
so you're saying, that could have been a resolution to the previous debacle in 2014. He could have said, okay, I'll do three in Croke Park and two in Parky Keeve. He could have moved
it,
but that was never suggested. But it's much more expensive to do different venues because you set up.
Now, Michael, no
one is forcing you to buy a ticket. And if he sells people buy the tickets at that price, well, that's the price they sell.
What about the fans? I mean, it's like a slap in the face. I can't understand people.
I'm fine, and it's not a slap in the face.
Well, I can tell you, good luck to you. But I can tell you one thing. I'm not being funny. I mean, did you buy tickets before to see him? You did?
Yeah, 400.
I did, She
spent 1,600 quid.
Did you not feel that, this is a bit of a joke? I'm not saying, it's obvious that you do love him. And it's obvious that he has a lot of fans over here. In Ireland.
But Susie Horan and Michael...
To wait for 7 years to come back. I mean, was he in a coma? Again, I'm saying that. I'm telling you the reason why he's coming back, and I don't care what anybody says, Joe. I don't care what the nation says. He's coming back over here because he cancelled his concerts all over him and a lot of parties in America.
But he's also touring across the States, and the venues we were looking at before lunch there, every one of them is already sold out.
It seems to be just a magnet.
Okay.
I don't know what it is.
Well, Michael,
Like he's already minted. Like, he doesn't need to come here at all.
Yeah, but the thing about it, I can't understand. We are very soft here when it comes to concerts. But I can tell you one thing. If someone gave you a free ticket tomorrow in the front row of that seat to see that man, there's not a chance in hell.
Whoever gives you that ticket, Michael, give it to me because I'll take it.
Michael, have you any... What do you think of the idea that a listener phoned in that should be three Irish acts on with him every night to try and spread the money around?
Absolutely, Joe. Okay. Absolutely. He's not going to do that.
Why not?
Because he'll have to split the money. Okay.
Joe at RT.ie. Fiona.
Hi, Joe.
What was your reaction when you heard the announcement today?
Oh, Joe, I was delighted. I was driving down the road this morning. I was screaming. I was nearly crashed the car. I was absolutely delighted. Absolutely over the moon. And I will pay, not that I'll pay any money, but, you know, I'll pay a reasonable amount to see him.
And have you seen him?
Yeah, Joe, I was really lucky. Well, first of all, on your show, myself and my mother won tickets.
Okay.
And obviously, that was for the show in Dublin, and obviously that didn't happen. So then, myself and my friend Pearl, we did a show, Brian Turbuddy's, and we won tickets to see him in Las Vegas and to meet him, So that was in the...
That's the photograph you sent in.
Yeah. Okay. We had a ball. And he was the nicest man. And the
did he mention Ireland?
Yeah, of course he did. Yeah. It was just myself and Pearl and two others and him.
Okay, so this is 2016, 2 years after the debacle.
Las Vegas.
What did he say about Ireland?
I was very disappointed. He said, "Sorry, the way that worked out." So we said, "Look, there's 400,000 people waiting to see us, so make sure you get there."
But a solution, and it was mentioned at the time of this program, was to do three nights in Croker. And two in Parky Keeve.
You know, Joe, I don't know what happened there. All I know is...
Joe, can I come in there
Michael,
for a minute?
Michael,
obvious I'm not going to win this battle. It's obvious that there's an awful lot of Gaelic Brook fans here, but they really have to sit down and think of it and think. 7 years, Joe.
There's no thinking to be done.
Made that point, Michael. But Fiona, when you went to see him in Vegas...
Yeah.
Does Garth Brooks have support acts? Do you follow me?
Is there anyone? His wife, Trisha Yearwood, was on with him.
She was a supporter?
She was on with him. She's a star in her own right. But you know, Joe, I would say that if he was asked, he'd say, yeah, sure, sounds like a great idea. Because he was actually talking about up-and-coming Irish acts at the time.
Okay, well then we'll see. So you want... Somebody pointed out to me, it was Angus McAnally who knows the business. Angus pointed out that sometimes on tour when we see, I don't know, the Rolling Stones supported by... the Andrews Boys, for wanting to name a band that doesn't exist, that the Andrews Boys would pay to go on that tour, or their record
But you know, Joe, he was such
a nice
guy.
We're asking Garth
to
pay.
I'd say Garth would. Yeah, I'd say Garth would love it. Joe,
Michael, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to. I leave you with this thing, right, Garth? It wouldn't be fair for me to turn around. I'm not condemning the... I'm not saying the man is not a bad singer. He's a good... He entertains people. What I can't understand, Joe, please, where was the man for 7 years? I mean, he was offered, right, 80,000. That's 160,000 people in two nights. Could he not have done the two nights in Croke Park and come back at a later stage? That's 160,000. Would you not be happy if 160,000 in two nights turned up to see you singing or somebody else? Or the Rolling Stones done one night and he got 80,000 people and they were happy with that.
Yeah, well, that's okay. You're saying he's money grabbing.
Yes, absolutely.
I think Garth is right. Like I think he was surprised that he sold out five nights.
Now, remember, he sang... I don't know whether you remember. I remember because I thought he was brutal. He sang Amazing Grace at Joe Biden's inauguration.
Oh, he was awful.
He was dreadful.
I watched that, Joe, and I fell asleep. I had the best sleep after listening to him.
I think Joe Biden fell asleep as well. Did
you see one of the security men nudging Joe Biden to wake him up?
Okay. Susie Howard, Michael Radigan, Fiona.
Right, thank you very much.
Gareth
bye
Brooks, 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
It was the conversation with Jane Seymour, the actress, Dr. Quinn, medicine woman, yeah? People might remember. And she's talked about, on The Meaning of Life, she talked on Sunday night, talked about near-death experiences. That prompted calls yesterday and more calls today. Okay, Theresa McAllister. Tell us what your experience in terms of, you were a nurse back in 97 in the USA. What happened?
Actually, it was in 67.
Okay, yeah, that's what I said. 19, did I not say 60? Okay, you're in the USA, you're a nurse, and what happened?
Well, I was on my way to work, and I worked in intensive care.
Okay.
And I was passing the hallway to the ER.
Okay.
And I noticed a man just conked out. He was walking and suddenly he was on the ground and he had no vitals. So
okay.
I started CPR, but immediately emergency room staff came out. I went on to work up to intensive care, coronary care. And that night he was transferred up to coronary care and I was working. And he had another cardiac arrest.
Wow.
And we tried to resuscitate him, and it went on for 20 minutes.
And he was completely gone, you think?
He was completely gone both times that I interacted with him. Like, he had no, yeah.
Okay.
And so we tried to resuscitate him for 20 minutes, and he didn't recover. And the chief anesthesiologist said, there's nothing more we can do. Now, the man was, like, in his early 40s, a picture of health. Mm-hmm. So. And we were all a group of young nurses and a new unit just opened and motivated. And, you know, we just said, please, can we try a little longer, please? And
and
he said, okay, for a little while more. So we kept trying anyway. And the next thing, there was a bit of a line that started on the EKG, on the monitor.
And how long are you working on him at this stage, Theresa?
Well, we were continuing on after 20 minutes. So at the 20 minutes, there was a call that we give up. And that was when we begged to keep going.
Okay. Well done. Well done.
That was all the interaction that I had, because when he did come to, he was in the unit, but he was in a coma. And then I was on holidays for a few weeks and he was moved on back to the ward and then home. And 2 months later, he came in to visit. And when he came in to visit, he said he wanted to thank us for what we had done. And he said he wanted to talk to the nurse with the Irish accent. That was me. And he said he remembered, he could recall me saying, please, please, can we keep going?
But he had no vitals at that stage.
No.
So he was technically dead.
Yes, yeah, and I had never met him. But he remembered my accent.
Can I speak to the nurse who had the Irish accent, who kept begging, keep going, and, keep going?
Yeah. And he explained to us, we talked to him, and he said he was floating above the room that we were working in.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he could see everything that was going on. And he said that he tried to make his body work to say, please keep going.
And
he could not get his body working.
And he's looking down on himself. He's looking down on you, which is a common, Jane Seymour said something similar, which seems to be a common experience. He's looking down on you working to save his life.
And he was hearing. He was also hearing.
And he could hear the Irish accent.
Yeah.
Saying, keep going. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done, Tress.
It was just interesting to hear his account of that,
yeah.
you know. you know.
And she was a young. By the way, when he collapsed, you're in work, obviously. But when he collapsed in the corridor, did you start working on him on the floor, or what's the procedure?
Yes.
What do you, wow.
Yes.
Well
yeah,
done.
But there was a backup right away.
Yeah, there always is,
right near the intensive care. Yeah,
okay, say there, Teresa, because I now have a Tras on the line. That's Teresa McAllister. Tras Lyons. Tras. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened?
Well, I just contacted the show because I've heard many accounts of people having these near-death experiences or experiences of the afterlife, and I over a period of 20 years had epilepsy.
Okay.
And when I had, there's two different types of seizures, grand mal seizures, where that most people would kind of maybe have some understanding of, you totally, your body just collapses and you're flailing, but. And I have no recollection. I have no recollection after the event. But I also have had petite mal seizures, which are also called absence seizures. And the experience is very, very similar to what I hear about people describing of this near-death experience, this feeling, I can sense it coming. I get this physical sensation kind of tingling in my hands. And if I'm in a conversation with people, they kind of drift. They drift away. And I no longer can see or hear anything in the present, in my present world. And I have this sensation of being in this, somehow of accessing this kind of alternative world, which it's very clear to me that this is a parallel world that exists all the time. It's not just like a dream where I've created this reality and it's going to burst and deflate once I wake up. It's a feeling that this is ongoing and I have somehow accessed this. And also, it seems to be peopled by, well, not peopled. When I'm in this state, I don't see anything, I don't hear anything. But
and Tras, when you're in the middle of an epileptic attack, do you feel pain or distress? Or?
No.
Because it looks very distressful.
Yes, no, those major ones, I'm totally out, totally unconscious, no recollection afterwards, no sensation during the attack. These are other ones where if I was talking to you and I had an absence seizure, you might not really be aware. You might think I had a strange look in my eye, but I no longer would see you or hear you, but I would be in this other kind of alternative, it sounds strange, alternative universe. And maybe because the first time I had these, it was right after my husband died. And so it seemed to be peopled by not angels or ghosts or spirits, but I had the sense that the people who were in this other world were people who had died. People I knew, but they had died. But it wasn't scary. It wasn't like heaven. I didn't see this big shining light or anything. It was more like... You know, if you're watching a movie and there's a scene of a carnival scene at nighttime, you know, that kind of heightened excitement where there's like roller coasters and kids screaming. And again, I don't see anything. It's just all through my senses. But there's a very clear idea that if I could stay there, and there's a draw to staying there because I have this feeling that I would learn something, that I would get some kind of understanding of something. I don't know what exactly, if I could stay, but I'm also conscious that I need to get back to, like, my real life.
Yeah.
So that's really it, but it just, because it sounds so similar to what other people have said about...
Trust, sorry. You said death. Do you think that the stress around death and grief and grieving and loss, do you think that had anything to do with the onset of that particular epileptic attack?
Yes, well, I think so, because I had subsequent ones and I tried my best. I hated being on the medication, so anything I could do to kind of minimize the chance that I might have one. I have low blood pressure, dehydration. I had a lot. The last ones I had, I was camping in the desert in California. I lived in America for a while. So dehydration, low blood pressure, stress, lack of sleep. So, yeah, those can trigger.
And does it affect, how long is it since your last attack?
Well, my last attack is great. It was 10 years ago, 2011.
But that means you can drive in that, if you wish.
So I just finally, I mean, in Ireland, you only have to be seizure-free for 1 year, but I waited to be seizure-free for 6 years just because I was worried.
Okay, say that, Tras. We're talking about near-death experiences, NDEs. They actually have an anagram for them. And Niall Cady. Niall, good afternoon.
How are you doing, Joe? It's Niall Cady here, yeah?
Niall Cady. Okay, 20 years ago, what happened?
Yeah, 20 years ago, I had a major car accident. I was in an awful bad way, and I was brought to James's, and I was in a coma for about a week. Mm-hmm. But I have memories of kind of hallucinations from whatever medication they give you and stuff like that. But this was different. This was distinctive. Basically, I was standing on one side of a bridge.
Right.
And on the other side of the bridge, there was a white horse. Now, for some reason, I called him Tiernan Oak because maybe I had seen Into the West recently or something. But he was neighing and beckoning me to come and get on the horse.
Right.
But there was also a black and white collie dog, and he was barking at me not to come across the bridge.
Now, you're in a coma. You've been told you were in a coma when this happened.
I told him this might be about 4 or 5 days later when I kind of came to and people asked me what happened. I had, you know, kind of weird fantasy stuff going on, but then I had this was real. This was something real that happened, as far as I was concerned in my own head. And there was that kind of you're in a kind of a circling tube with light around you, like you could only see so far, and it was just bright light. But on the other side of this bridge was definitely a horse beckoning me to get on the horse, but then there was a black and white collie. And I always remember that I was always disappointed when Lassie came into colour, because I thought Lassie was black and white.
Okay.
But and it was just like that. It was like barking like that. But there's another thing, Joe, as well. Which
so
I,
the horse I always, was the horse was beckoning you, and the dog was trying to get you to retreat.
Exactly. To keep not come across the bridge. Basically, don't go across
a bridge. Okay.
Yeah. And I opted for the dog choice, and you know I love dogs and I love animals and so on. But there's a second thing happened as well, Joe, which is fascinating. I was in intensive care for about a week, and they said to me, "Okay, right now we're going to bring you down and put you on a ward now, and you'll be in a room on your own, but you'll be monitored."
Okay.
And I said, "Oh, yeah, okay, grand." So they wheeled me down, and the funny thing you remember now about the hospital is looking up at the ceiling.
Because
you're lying in the bed and you're going through these wards. But anyway, they wheeled me in and got me all ready and blah, blah, blah. And there was a nurse in the room. And I just found her. She wasn't very pleasant. She was a bit mean and not very friendly. And when my parents would come in or anybody would come and visit me, she never spoke to them. But then when they'd leave, she'd say, "Now, look at your poor mother there. She's distraught. She's upset. You nearly died. And look what you did to her. Like, you're awful."
Mm-hmm.
And I just always thought she was very nasty.
How much is she saying the car accident was your fault?
Kind of. Well, like, you know, if you look what you have to put your mother and father through and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, 9 months later, I'm better and I'm getting discharged from hospital, and a social worker comes to see me and says, "Niall, just tell us about your experiences in hospital and how did it go?" Blah, blah, blah. I said, "Look, they've been great. The doctors, the nurses, surgery, they got fantastic." I said, I hate mentioning it, but this one nurse who constantly kind of gave out to me and wasn't very pleasant and nice. The nurse that was minding me when I first came out of intensive care. And the social worker went, "Okay, right, yeah, I'm going to find out who that was now." And she went off and she came back and she said, "There was no nurse minding you when you came out of intensive care."
So that was hallucination as well. That was...
Well, hallucination or dream or memory or whatever. But I remember her distinctly. She sat in the corner reading a book. I remember her. Nurses don't do.
Not Irish nurses. They run off their feet.
Yeah.
But Niall, how long were you in hospital for?
About 9 months. On and off 9 months. I was getting different surgeries.
Do you remember? Okay, you don't remember the coma, though. You remember the white horse and the black dog saying A and nay, so to speak. But do you remember the accident?
No. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
And were other people injured in the accident?
No. It was just me, and I was rushed to the Lourdes Hospital. My arm was crushed and nearly off, and then they sent me from the Lourdes to James's to have my arm removed. But I was very, very lucky. There was another chap in the hospital on the very same day. And he had his arm pulled off by a tractor, you know, a PTO and a tractor.
Yeah, we were talking about last week.
So they had everybody in place on a Sunday, they were there in the hospital when I arrived. So they didn't have, so they said if they had to call the doctors to fix me up, it would have taken too long and it would have been too late.
So they did save your arm.
Yeah, they saved my arm because they said it was the first time they had called in like the
That's
emergency
incredible.
Guys.
And how are you now?
Great, not a bother. Yeah, no, it's all fixed up now. Yeah, and
okay.
Yeah,
so you reckon the Norse ratchet in the corner was reading a book? You don't remember what book she was reading, do you?
No,
in
no,
your hallucination.
I think she was. It was a type of fighting to live kind of situation. It was.
But
she
wouldn't speak. She didn't speak when anyone was in the room. But the moment the parents left, she'd get up and admonish you.
Yes, yes.
Definitely
yes.
Hallucination. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. Incredible memory, by the way. Incredible.
Yeah,
memory.
It is. But as I said, like there were other things. Like I suppose I don't know if you got what you get morphine or whatever you get when you're in awful pain. But I seen funny fellas on the wall kind of thing, which you could say, okay, that's hallucinations and that's weird stuff. But this stuff was more realistic. It was fascinating.
What a memory. Okay, Niall Keady, thanks to Teresa McAllister and Trass Lyons, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Yesterday on the programme we were talking about Rip Off Ireland, and we will be again later on today, but one of the examples was cauliflower and rice in a restaurant. Cauliflower and rice, that was €18. And the other thing was polenta, which is pretty tasteless if you don't put something through it. Polenta and a bit of a stuffed pepper, that came in at £25. And vegan, the caller made the point that veganism isn't catered for. Now, Suzanne Connolly contacted us. What point do you want to make about veganism, Suzanne?
How's it going? Just to say that it's one of the fastest growing lifestyles in the world. And I hear you about all of that, the menus that are on offer in some places are atrocious, but the menus that are on offer in some other places are just beyond beautiful and divine. And, I remember years and years ago when I went vegan, there were three restaurants in Dublin that were vegetarian, and there's one of them now left because you can pretty much get vegetarian everywhere.
Oh, good point, yeah.
And vegan is... It's not for everybody, there's no question about it. But for those who are interested in it, it's just a lot more widely available and rightly so, in my opinion, you know.
And are there any downsides to veganism? Do you need... is protein absent or do you get it other ways?
No, it's not. No. The protein isn't the problem, really. There's protein in all sorts of foods that you wouldn't even think. There's protein in apples, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's B12 is the issue. And you can get that in supplemented foods or... You can get vitamin tablets and what have you for it. But the pluses far outweigh any of, in my experience, and I'm not trying to sell it to anybody, but for me, I've been vegan 30 years, long before it was fashionable, and it definitely has contributed to me feeling a lot healthier and more
and
energy.
Do you find it as an expensive menu choice, which was our point the caller was making yesterday?
No, not at all. To the contrary, in fact. I was looking at some... We have some people coming in from out of town in the next day or so, and I was looking at some restaurants and some menus in restaurants in town now, and you're looking upwards of 22, 28, 30 for places like... I mean, I don't want to plug a whole lot of places, but Coppinger Row and Fallon and Burn, places like that, and you pay through the nose for, you know, steaks and what have you.
Well, you pay the average rate, I think, that you do in most restaurants in Dublin. I don't want to single out two restaurants that be here till Christmas.
No, I'm not counting them out.
Vegans don't drink any, and you wouldn't drink milk or eat cheese or butter or...
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
And you don't eat meat. But if you were... Which would you give up first?
I went vegetarian when I was 11 because Paul Weller was vegetarian, and in my view, that was enough of a reason.
If you were advising somebody, I want to move towards veganism, but I don't want to give up everything at the same time. Will I give up milk, dairy product, or will I give up eating meat first?
I'm not here to tell people what to do, but it's up to you, you know, and it's up to your everybody's different. Do you know what it is, though, too, as well? There's no such thing as a vegan police. Do whatever feels right to you, you know? But red meat, I would get... If you were asking me and if you were saying to me if there was one thing that I, had to take off the menu, definitely be red meat, just for your own health, apart from anything else.
But you're in fairness, Suzanne, you're also saying veganism isn't for everybody.
Of course not. No,
okay,
of course not.
Good point. Okay. Okay, Suzanne Connolly, thanks indeed. We're going to move on to Emma Gray, but this is about money as well, but it's a different angle, because we were talking a lot about money yesterday and prices. Emma, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Now, it's a very unusual situation. Will you take your time and explain it? Because I don't think enough people understand
Highlighted, Annie.
Yeah. Okay, well, you tell us then. Please, Emma.
Okay, so my son Connor, he was born with a club foot 13 years ago.
And what is a club foot?
A club foot is when he was born, his foot was turned inwards.
Okay.
So then he had to go through a series of castings and boots and bars and operations. He's had about 7 operations at the minute. He does face foot surgeries down the road and all as well.
Oh my gosh.
So he was in boots and bars up till he was 4. Okay. And then everything was okay. And then when he was 6, I noticed his foot was turning when he was walking. So he relapsed. And because, you know, it's not highlighted, it's not talked about or anything, I never knew that he could have relapses. So he's kind of had a good few relapses since he was 6. And I said he's 13 now. He's had a lot of surgeries, a lot of tough things.
If your son didn't have, I don't know whether you want to give me his first name or not, but
if Connor
didn't have the surgery, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 operations, what would happen to his foot?
Well, his foot would be turned in, like, so
completely.
He wouldn't be able to. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Years and years and years ago, club foot was a big disability. So, you know, there was no such thing really as corrections and stuff like that. And if you were born with a club foot, you know, unfortunately, you just lived your life like it.
Good.
Like my husband. Where he's from, there was a man up there with born with club foot, and because there was no treatment as such for him, even to this day, he's still going around like walking completely different. Like,
So
surgeries and castings and everything is so important. But
he's now 13, is Connor.
He's 13 now.
He's a big lad, and big teenagers want, they don't want pairs of black slip-ons. They want the designer trainers. But there's an extra, which I don't think people will understand or know about. They will in a second. There's an extra charge for you when Connor looks for a pair of trainers.
Yeah, so the biggest problem we have, when Connor was younger, there wasn't much difference in his shoe sizes. And if there was, we could always, like, you know, buy cheap brands. If we had to buy 2 pairs, we were buying cheap brands because you could get the same kind. So as Connor's got older, over the last maybe 8 years now, there's always been 2 sizes. At the minute, he's 2.5 sizes different. So in his left foot, which is his club foot, he's a 4.5, which is a child size. And in his right foot, he's an adult 7.
So you would go into a shoe store or Pennies or whatever people buy their footwear, and you would buy 2 pairs of shoes, one size, because you can't buy one shoe, one size 4.5. And then you try and get the same shoe, same style of shoe, but you'd have to buy a pair of 7s. And you use one in one, and then the other,
Just put it in the bin.
Because the other shoe is on the other foot, so to speak.
That's it. No good.
Yeah, it's no good. Sure, it's not. You take the left one out of one pair and the right one out of one pair. So, but you've the opposite left, the opposite remaining. So they have to be binned.
So they have to be binned.
Wow.
So as I said, when he was younger, that wasn't really a big issue or anything.
Okay.
But as he's getting older, it's becoming more of an issue. You know, he's more aware of it. And he's such a nice chap. Like, he really is. He has a heart of gold and never complains through any surgeries. And always, always happy to have a pair of shoes. It doesn't matter what it is. And he has his confirmation coming up this week. Wow. And I just want him to have what everybody else has. And, you know, he never has it. Like, I mean, I was talking about his shoes the other day. And my family is going to help me out to get 2 pairs of shoes for him, because, you know, they're not cheap. Like, you know, one pair is going to cost me 100 and the other pair is going to cost me 140.
Well, that's
but I was telling
course,
Connor this.
Okay. Is that not, and trainers aren't cheap. You pay twice, 3 times that for designer trainers. So
exactly.
You're going to size 4.5, they cost 140 quid. You have to buy 2 of them. You'll only use one, and the other one is useless. You have the 7s are they're more expensive.
Yes.
So, but you've basically doubled the price. You've doubled, to give them one pair of trainers, you have to buy two pairs.
Yes. And you know,
is there any state intervention that takes? And I don't think people would realise that incredible difference in cost for someone with a club foot. The phrase you use. Is there any state aid you can get? You know, celiacs could get reductions or you go to community welfare for, because the food can be more expensive.
No, there is a grant, there is a payment that I get every month for Connor.
Oh dear, okay.
And that, yes, that does help towards it, but why I've got in contact, well, my friend got in contact with Joe, is that it's not just now, like, you know, I'm thinking of Connor's future. Connor's 13 now. In another 5 years, he's going to be at work. And how is it fair on him that he has to go and spend all his wages trying to get a pair of runners or something?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not fair on him. Like, there is nobody out there, no company that is willing to...
Yeah, good point.
Like,
yeah.
And club foot is a big thing, like, you know. Yeah. And just because it's not highlighted or talked about, like, it is a big thing. And how is it fair on him when he gets older... That he, like I said, I can help him out now.
Is there anywhere? And I exactly see your point. The 4.5 left, the 7 right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which means you're left with a 7 left and a 4.5.
And a 4.5, right?
Okay.
Yeah. I see. You can't really get a 4.5 a year. So what I try to do for him, so it's not going to, you know, so it's not as noticeable for him, is I try to go for a 5.5 on the left, so it's only one size in difference, and then. Well, it's like he's 4.5, so if I go for 5.5, that's okay on him. Like,
but I'm thinking, given the online options now, where you can buy every permutation of when you're buying a car, you can get 172 different add-ons and features.
Yeah.
But there's no company online that says we will do our best to if you need two shoe sizes for one pair of feet, we will do our best to facilitate. No.
Years and years ago, Clarks, they used to do it years and years ago.
Okay.
This is obviously well before I had my child or anything like that. But they stopped doing it. So I just don't know, why is there no company out there? Like, you know, why is there nobody out there doing it? Because there's parents like me, and I'm sure, like, you know, Connor is not unique. He's not the only one out there with club foot. So how does everybody else manage this?
Very good. Emma, how does Connor manage it in school? And does he can play sports, I presume?
Well, he can't, and that's his biggest thing, actually. Like, he really, really wants to go back to soccer this year, and Connor's always wanted to play football and all. But because he's had so many operations, he's been, you know, recovery, and then he's been in splints, and he's been sore. So only up to 3 weeks ago, he went down to Cork to get this injection of steroids and into his ankle for pain. So that was 3 weeks ago, and soccer is starting back now soon. So he's wanting to give soccer a go to see if he can do it. And, you know, hopefully this injection will work, but this injection is only temporary fix as well. So, you know, he really wants to go to soccer. He loves soccer, and I would love not more for him to be able to do what he really wants to do.
And
but even that, like, that's going to be an issue trying to get a soccer boots from, like, you know, how do I go about doing that? Like, you know, would it cost me a fortune, like?
And do you, no, is there an association?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
No, there's...
And do you know other parents and other children who have a club foot, as you call it?
No, not really, actually. When we were down in Cork 3 weeks ago, he was obviously put asleep for this injection and all, and we were down for the day.
Yeah.
And there was another woman in there, and her son was actually the same age as Connor. And that's the first time I was sitting down talking to someone that knew exactly what I was talking about and everything. Like, but no, there's nothing. Like, you know, no, there's nothing. There's nothing. It's like I said, it's not highlighted. And
is there a centre in Ireland? Is there one hospital where everyone goes to that specialises?
Yeah, there's one in Cork. That's where we go, and I think there's another one in Dublin.
Okay, what's the one in Cork called? Is it the University Hospital Cork?
No, it's the South Infirmary.
Oh, the South Infirmary. And what's the one in Dublin?
South Infirmary. I don't know what the one in Dublin is.
Because
when Connor was a baby, he used to go to Waterford up till he was 4. And then when he had a relapse when he was 6, the doctor was no longer there. So we got transferred to Cork from then.
Okay. Because I don't know if we did it, but I know there was a call there, and I know something else often happens, came on live line and took off. so to speak. But that, there's a woman saying she's polio and she finds it really difficult to get footwear as well now. That's changed. Okay, Emma, what's the you said there is a monthly recognition by the state. Is that what's that called?
That's called domiciliary care.
Okay.
So that helps, I suppose, like towards
hospital
trips and job kind of needs.
But
stuff
I'm thinking
kind of
in the world we live in, with so many things online, it's probably not economical for one shop to do it, but it would be economical for JD Sports or the various other Elverleys or the big brands.
Exactly, but even
Direct.
If it's one brand.
Yeah, to do it, yeah.
Because they know they're going to, you know, they know they're going to have clients by doing it. Like, you know, if we had one brand or one shop that was able to meet
one online offer, I'm not advocating.
That's it.
But you know what I mean.
You
know? An online can give you the volume if there's a.
Yeah, okay, but like, you know, if there's just one person like that was able to help us and help Connor for the future. You know, that's all I want.
Kind regards to Connor. He sounds like a fantastic boy. He's making his
confo.
His confo, is he?
He is. He's making it on Saturday the fourth date, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Emma, and regards
Thanks
to Connor.
Very much,
Thanks indeed. Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Robert Mazzell is a well-known country and Western country singer, and he was due to have another fantastic tour called, including the Nashville Songbook, but I see from his website everything is cancelled. Now, Robert Mazzell is online. Robert, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. And how long is it since you've actually played in front of a live audience?
Well, up until this weekend, it was a long time, over a year, Joe. But I actually had a couple of gigs this weekend. I'm setting up rehearsals now for the Three Amigos. We're doing a couple of dates, streaming dates, over the next few days. So there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel for us, and I'm delighted, I have to say.
Now, RT News are now reporting that Garth Brooks is to attempt to do 5 concerts in Croke Park next year, 5 in a row. Now, I don't know whether you heard Michael Ratigan at the start. His points were, one, he's going to suck so much money out of the entertainment industry, something like 24 million in tickets. Mm-hmm. Two, Michael said, which he's only doing it for his pension, where has he been for 7 years? Why didn't he come back? Three, Michael said, when the 5 gigs row went on in 2014, why didn't he say, I'll do 3 in Croker and 2 in Parky Kiev, like Bruce Springsteen does? And then the fourth point was a suggestion that given the entertainment industry has died here in the last 2 years, that if he's on for 5 nights, he should put on 3 support acts every night, 10-15 minutes each, one solo singer, one band, and one up and coming, and they should get paid very well for the...
Absolutely.
What do you think of those 5 points?
First of all, I've already sent an email into AK Promotions yesterday because I heard he was coming, and I think from my point of view, I mean, it would be the gig of my life to be able to support him in Ireland. You know, I've lived here 30 years, and to be able to be on a stage like that with Garth Brooks. And I can see the concerns of people with ticket pricing and the amount of shows and the controversy around Croke Park and all that sort of thing. But look, Joe, we've been off so long, and I think people are out there, they're hungry, they want to get out and enjoy themselves. And in my opinion, if he was coming for 10 nights, let him play. Open the door and let him play. You know, and...
It's
not going to affect my business. It's not going to affect any other Irish band.
Okay.
By him,
but you have,
no
you have, you have written to Peter Aiken saying, "Can I be a support act?"
I have.
Okay. Did you get a reply?
No reply just yet. But look, I would know. I would have known Jim down through the years, and I had worked along with the guys.
Peter's
I know
daddy.
Peter's a good guy.
Now, Robert, do support acts get paid?
I don't know, Joe. I've never done that much support for shows like that. I don't know.
But you wouldn't be expected to do it for nothing.
No,
after the 2 years
well,
you're coming
here's
through.
What I would say. I would happily do it for nothing, as long as my band got paid, because they're the guys who I'm supporting and trying to get back on the road because they have families to feed. As an artist myself, I would do it for the opportunity. I'm just putting that out there. I would do it because it's a big stage. It's a big event. And you wouldn't get that opportunity too many times in your life. But I wouldn't ask my musicians to do it for nothing. I would pay them if they didn't get paid for it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And somebody said some support acts actually pay to get on the stage.
Absolutely. That happens. That happens.
And some big acts actually get 97% of the gate.
Yeah. Well, all I can tell you today, Joe, I wish I was Garth Brooks.
I know.
I wish I had his trouble.
Well, have you ever seen him perform?
No. Yes. I was here in 94, I think it was, when he played the old O2, which was then the Point Depot. I was there. I was also in Crow Park, and I recorded a full Garth Brooks album as a tribute to him.
Wow.
About 8 or 9 years ago. So, and I've done very well out of that over the years. You know, look.
And what's your favorite Garth Brooks song?
Well, I do one every night when I go out. It's called "She's Every Woman." It wouldn't be one of his mainstream songs, but it's a lovely. We do sort of a piano thing on it. And look, I think Garth Brooks captured the nation many years ago when he came. Mm. You know, he's a world class entertainer, and you know, I think the country needs it. If the people in Dublin can live with it, and look, I understand their woes as regards, you know, that many nights, you know, around Crow Park and all that. But look, the music industry in Ireland, and I don't think any musician that I know would turn their nose up.
Yeah, of course.
At having the
It'd be a great
to
opportunity to show, to showcase. Okay.
Yeah.
So Robert Mazel, your current album is called what? Postcards from Paris. Another great
Postcard
album.
Postcards from Paris.
I think you have about 15 albums. Have you many albums? Have you, Robert?
I have 15.
Good
15
lad.
Albums. I think, and I'm working on a brand
support
new one
Irish
right now,
acts. Okay. Robert Mazel is a force Irish act forward saying, "Can I play a support to Garth Brooks?" Okay. Well done, Robert Mazel.
Please.
Well done, Robert
Mazel,
and the Garth Brooks concert next year. Near death experiences and out-of-body experiences. Anne in Dublin. Anne, what happened?
When I was 12, Joe, I had an occurring dream from the age of 12 to 15 where I'd go to bed at night time,
mm-hmm.
and then in the middle of in my sleep, I would go to across my bedroom window. We had a big window, and I would see myself kneeling at the big window, but then I would look out into our garden where we used to have rabbits, and I would see myself in the rabbit hutch with the little boy with a white pajamas. And I had a white nightdress, but I never had a white nightdress. I used to go to bed with pajamas.
Mm-hmm.
So there was me and the little boy. And I used to look at him, and he used to have a halo on his head. And when I was 12 years of age, I had that dream so often. I said it to the priest, was I playing with baby Jesus? Because I said I was in the rabbit hutch with him. And the priest said, well, you know, and there's an answer to all those questions.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, not today, we're busy today. But I had that occurring to dream, and I often wondered, did I die a few times in my dream? Because how did I get to play with baby Jesus and remember that dream the next day? And it went on until I was about 15.
And did the padre have any frame to put on it? No,
he just said every time I'd see him, or if there was a religion class, I loved religion. I loved the Bible stories. I absolutely loved them.
Okay.
And I would say, I had a dream about baby Jesus. And they say, well, tell us. And I'd tell them. That. And I said, well, what happened? How am I the only one in the class that's having this dream? And they said, oh, we'll get to that now. No, we'll bring that one up again now the next time and we get mm-hmm. it. And of course, I would have the dream again before the religion was once a week. The story reading, but nobody told me was it a near-death experience. I didn't even think of the word death experience. I thought I was privileged that I got to play with baby Jesus in the middle of the night. But the strange thing about it was I was kneeling on my window, like a Georgian house with a big window. So I was only tiny tot, 12 years of age. And I would see myself in my bed, and then I would see myself at the window, but then I was looking out at myself in the garden playing with baby Jesus. So did I die and play with baby Jesus on those occasions, or what happened to me? Because a lot of people, if they say they died, they saw a white light. I just saw the halo, and it wasn't like a necklace or a hat on the head. It was something like a halo that was on baby Jesus.
Okay, stay there, Anne. Eamon, what was your near-death experience? It was brain surgery, my God.
Yeah,
tell us what happened.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had a tumour in 2017, and I had a awake craniotomy. Which went fine. I remembered everything in relation to it. Unfortunately for me, I suffered complications after being a lung clot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was left with the choice of taking a blood thinner. And if I didn't take the blood thinner, the lung clot was going to kill me. So I had to take the blood thinner, which left me, obviously, then, after fresh surgery, with two bleeds on the brain.
Of course,
Which put me into intensive care then. And I just seem to have a great memory, Joe. I remember, it was just basically, I remember in intensive care, obviously, you're on a lot of heavy medication. And I remember, you know, I was, you close your eyes and you'd see cartoons. I remember seeing the chap across me, and he had a black panther sitting on his lap. And I could accept, I could understand that all those were hallucinations in relation to the drugs.
Okay.
So, unlike then, I was deteriorated. I got pneumonia as well, and basically I had every complication that you could think of, by falling down the stairs, as the surgeon put it later on. But I wouldn't really refer to it as a near death experience, Joe, because it kind of makes you sound a bit crazy. You know, I think people kind of think you're a bit crazy.
But you can remember the hallucinations.
Yeah, I can remember the hallucinations.
Did you check with visitors or family? Like, was I awake or was I in a coma?
I'd be awake, Joe, but obviously you're on morphine-based drugs when you're when you're very sick. So I could accept. Well, this does not really a path.
And how are you now after the brain tumor?
Yeah. Okay, Joe. I have epilepsy and I have a couple other problems, but the experience, the difference between the experience was that one night I was pretty bad and my wife was told not to go home, and that night I remember floating. It was like the scene out of Gladiator where he goes to the door and you put your hand out to open the door,
okay,
and it didn't open the door.
Oh, nice.
And you walk back to where, or you came back to where you were. But I can distinguish between that and the actual hallucinations of, say, seeing a panther or seeing a... So it was totally different, but, it's definitely something that happens.
There's a lot of calls on it, Eamon.
Well, see, I think there's a bit of a stigma of talking about it.
Well, people are talking about it now, thankfully. I hope you continue to improve, Eamon. Thanks indeed.
Joe at RTE.ie
continues. Angus McInerney produced, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul, with a range up to 452 kilometres.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.